come back with a whole new perspective on life. And that's one that we need to be so thankful for what we have, because those people there are just, they live in complete poverty. We are so wealthy in so many ways here. And, I mean, we realize that if we want something to eat, we can walk right down the street to any fine dining establishment. And these people, this is not meant to be a mockery. They eat in Inn of the Bus restaurant. I mean, that is what you see down there. They eat off the pits on the side of the road. They eat off of these restaurants. And that's what they have, and they're perfectly happy with it. And, laundry for us. You know, if we want to do our laundry, we walk down the hall to the utility room, and we throw our laundry in a washing machine. Or if we want to take a bath, you walk into the master bathroom, you grab your soap and your shampoo, and you take a bath. This is a stream that runs down behind the cave church that we were at, and this is where these people do their laundry and take their baths. Every day, while we're at church, these people are out here. They carry their laundry from their homes, which could be 2 miles up the hill, which is not a hill like we have around here. It's a hill. And they have quite a hike to make. And they're out there taking care of their normal business. When you turn around from where this picture was taken on the stream, and you see cave, this is the church where we study. Not a whole lot to it. They put up a fence this year, which keeps out most of the riffraff while we're there. But you still have to fence them off through the fence. And though we can't help them so much with their wealth in a monetary sense, I think we did a great job in boosting their wealth in a spiritual sense while we were there. We worked, and Ken and I, mainly with the kids in Vacation Bible School. There were lessons given every night where Americans preached and devotionals given, but I'm going to focus on the Vacation Bible School. When we got there, I guess we got to Savalomar, this is where this is. Got there on Monday morning, and we started Vacation Bible School, and this went on for 4 days. We didn't have too many kids there the first day. There were only four in our group, which was the nursery. And of the four groups, there was nursery, which was 0 to 5 years old, primary was 6 to 9, middle school was 10 to 12, and the high schoolers were 13 and up from there. And everybody learned their different lessons, and Anna Kay and I were put in the nursery group, which was quite an experience in its own as well. We had the four little kids the first day, and they were perfectly behaved, no crying, they got along great. And then when the word got out that we were having Vacation Bible School, which for some reason did not the first day, we ended up with somewhere between 15 and 20 for the rest of the days, and that's a lot of little road rats to keep in line. In the nursery class, we spent most of our time studying the creation story. We started with that, and when all the kids had the idea down that God created everything, including them and us, we moved on to the story of Noah and the Ark. And this was fun. We had a little book to go along with and a whole box of little animal toys. We had puppets and stuffed animals and little balls we blew up that looked like animals. And they got to take them and walk them two by two together, just the way they did Noah and the Ark. And they had a great time with that. After we finished the stories every day, we had coloring sheets for the kids to keep them occupied that went along with the lessons that they learned. And they had a great time with that. And then it was somebody's idea to break out modeling clay one morning so they could build the animals. There were no animals built. And when you get modeling clay out in 105-degree weather, it melts all over everything. So we had green modeling clay strewn from one end of the room to the other. So we spent quite a bit of time cleaning that up, which was fun. These are two of our shining stars that we had in the nursery class. In the front, that's Selena. She is a brilliant little girl. She is the only child I've ever seen color inside the lines. Her pictures she colored were perfect. I think I actually have one of them folded up in my Bible if I can find it. And that is Shoshana behind her. And at first, Shoshana was a little rough. She liked all the crowns to herself and all the toys to herself. But we sat her down for a minute and talked to her about how she has to share. And she caught on really quick. And she is also one of the very bright girls in the class. That's a different story here in a minute. The primary group, the kids were taught lessons about character mainly. They learned everything from being kind to one another to being fair, which is quite a lesson to teach those kids. I don't have any pictures from these groups because we were stuck in the nursery the whole time, which is about a 6x10 room back in the back. It's got one window in it, so we were back there and didn't have a whole lot of opportunities to take pictures of the other groups. I think George has something he'll share with us. The middle school group, which I got one day to be out there for a while. I was on crowd control in the middle school group. And they focused on lessons of respect. And they also learned a little song that went along to teach them the books of the New Testament, which is actually, being in there myself, quite helpful to me. So they were asking the kids. I was hoping the girl that was leading the class wasn't going to call on me to go through them in order. I kind of slouched down in my chair. But I called on by the end of that day. But they learned respect in the sense of respecting one another, respecting their parents, and also respecting God's word. We had a little lesson with the boys. Myself had a little lesson with the boys. They were not being respectful one day. They were talking and throwing rocks at each other. And so I moved all the girls to the back of the class because they were being good. And I gathered all the boys around me and asked them what they were really doing there. And I asked them if they were there to learn about Jesus and learn about God, or if they were there to throw rocks at each other and flirt with the girls. And they quickly understood that it was not very respectful to their teacher who was taking time out of their day, or to Jesus and God themselves to be slashing down their chairs and not paying attention. So after that, they were all sitting straight up, bright-eyed, and they paid very close attention. Like I said, I don't have pictures of that, but all these classes did very well on their own. I think in the middle school class they were up to, they had 60 people in there one day. I think total, our best total was right shy of 250, I think. Just shy of 250 in the Vacation Bible School class. And it's quite an experience getting in there when you have one very small van and one bus, which is a little bigger. But I think of the 28-passenger bus, we had 75 people in or something like that. So pack them in there pretty tight. This is Aaliyah. She was one of the girls in our nursery class, and I just had to stick that picture up there. I don't think they'd get much cuter than that. She was a sweetheart. And she had a little friend that was 2 years old and would not quit crying. She cried and cried and cried. And I tried to bounce her on my knee, and I was holding her and making faces at her, and I brought her over to the window to show her her parents outside and everything, and she just would not quit crying. And one of the other girls in the class, she was 5, she tapped me on the shoulder and asked me to come sit down next to her. And she whispered something to me. And most of the children will speak slow enough you can understand them, but they're very quiet, so I had to ask her again. And she informed me that the reason that the child was crying was because I was white and she was scared. And it dawned on me that some of these children, they live so far back in the woods, they've never seen white people before. And that was the problem here. She was just terrified of me, so I had to call Chris Jones in there. That's a little help. But this is Samario, and he turned out to be one of my favorites. He gravitated to me from the get-go. And as I watched him, I noticed that there were quite a few other kids that followed him around and did the same things he did. And he was a very bright young man, well-behaved. And so I pulled him aside one day and I asked him how he takes care of his life and stuff. And he sounded like he does a pretty good job for being that age. He doesn't know a whole lot yet. But I asked him if he realized that he has friends and stuff that follow him around out there. And he said, yeah. I said, so do you understand that everything you do, they're going to do? He said, yeah. Said, all right, well, there's a lot of things that you're going to face here in Jamaica growing up in this culture that are going to be very bad and you're going to have to fend off. And if you fall into those traps, you're going to have a whole lot of people follow right behind you. So he kind of, I think that hit him where it counted. He got a different look in his eye and he kind of nodded to me. So the night before I preached, Thursday night, I gave Samario a Bible. And I wrote him a nice story in the front of it, a little letter for some encouragement. And I asked him if he wanted to follow along with me. He said, yeah, that'd be great. So I kept an eye on him the whole time I was preaching. And with a little help from Anna Kay, he followed every single verse I called upon and kept very strong eye contact the rest of the time. Thanked me for the lesson afterwards. So I think he's a pretty good prospect, and I'll be interested to either go back on my own or hear some other people's reports in the future to see how he's turning out. And there's Sabrina. And Sabrina is an inspiration also. Not so much herself, but just her story, her family story, I guess. There are many families in Jamaica who it's a one-parent family. And normally it's the father of the child who disappears and leaves the mother to take care of the children. And this is a little different. The mom, when she was pregnant, she ran off, and when she had Sabrina, she came back and gave her to Jude, which is her father, and the mom left again. So Jude is stuck with his baby. And from what I've seen and heard stories of, a lot of times babies just get left in the street and whoever picks them up takes care of them. But Jude has done a great job with Sabrina, so great that she's absolutely spoiled rotten. And so he takes care of this little girl, takes her to church with him, and she is hilarious. She really is. She is one of our strongest voices in the church. She out-sings all the adults. She's quite a loud one. And after we were through with our Vacation Bible School in Cave, we spent a day driving to Alligator Pond to visit Marlon and Aretta. And I don't know how many of you have heard the story of Marlon and Aretta. I'm sure you've heard reports on them in previous years. This is my first time to meet them. I'd read their story in an email that we received. And through word of Anna Kay, she said last year Marlon was very down on his luck, bedridden, couldn't get out. I mean, he's paralyzed, but I mean, they couldn't get him out of the wheelchair or anything. And this year when we showed up, Marlon was not in his bed. And everybody that had been there in previous years was just, you know, awestruck. You know, they're asking, you know, where's Marlon? Is something wrong? Where is he gone? We turn around, and he's got somebody pushing him around in his wheelchair out in the yard. And he's out soaking up some sun and having a good time. And seemed to be in very high spirits to me. He led our prayer before we sang, and after we sang, actually. He sang along with all the songs. He seemed to be in very high spirits, and Aretta as well. I thought that was a great picture that Anne Kay captured there. That look that she's giving him, she just looks truly happy there, and that's great to see. After we visited Marlon and Aretta, we moved on to Montego Bay, which Anna Kay and George and I did not get much time to stay here. We were not able to attend the Vacation Bible School here, but we did attend church there in the evening and one Sunday. And these are just some of the kids that we met along the way. In the top left, that's Josh in the white dress. It almost looks like a wedding gown. And I can't quite recall her friend's name, but those are both two very cute little girls. On the top right, that's Tito, and he thinks he's half monkey. He crawls all over you. Jason on the bottom left there is Anna Kay. That is Maxwell James' son, and he's going to be quite an upstanding young man. He does a very fine job. An inspiration to me, this is, I want to say his name is Tavali, is the way you pronounce it. I think he's about 12 years old, and the kid is afraid of nothing. Being a new member myself, I sometimes get nervous to come up here, and I have a hard time stepping up to do things. And he hops right up there, and he leads songs, and he leads prayers, and it's just amazing to see somebody that passionate about what he's doing. So he was an inspiration to myself. Like I said, we did not get the chance to partake in the Vacation Bible School in Montego Bay, but we received word from the other people that they're doing great. They had a very fine turnout. The kids paid attention and behaved well. So that's good to hear. And lastly, I would just like to thank everyone who gave us support. Those of you who gave us monetary support, if it weren't for you, we never would have made it to Jamaica. And on the other hand, those of you who gave us spiritual and emotional support, we would have never made it out of Jamaica if it were not for y'all. So thank you to everyone, and I will turn the rest of it over to George.
First of all, I want to just compliment the guys that travel with me. We had six of us from Texas, at least kind of the Central Texas connection. Joe and Anna Kay and Chris Jones. By the way, Chris wanted to be a part of this today. He is with family in East Texas. Most of you may have known that as we were boarding the plane in Dallas to make our final leg down to Montego Bay, he received word from his mom that an uncle had died. And so Chris is in East Texas with that family today, and that's why he's not with us this afternoon. But I was very proud of the group that went with us, and you would have been too. All six of them were very cooperative. I have no complaints about the way they dressed, and that was not necessarily true of all the group. They got in there and got involved in whatever activity, whether it was loading suitcases on a truck or whether it was just being involved in the Bible class. Joe and Trevor and Chris, all three did great jobs with their Bible classes and their devotionals and with their sermons, and it was a pleasure to travel with them. I also want to just thank you. 1992 was my first trip to Jamaica. This year I completed my seventh journey, and I want to, some of you have been through all of that financially, and I appreciate that. It's a pleasure to be able to go and to work with the folks down there. I have a few pictures that I'm just going to share with you real quickly. Here is our group the first day of arrival at Sangster Airport in Montego Bay. Chris and myself, Joe, Anna Kay, and Julia Lassiter, and Trevor West. This is Montego Bay, and that's David and Flora Tant, our fearless leaders, and they're also there with Maxwell James, who is the preacher from Montego Bay. James Brown, a young man that I met on the very first trip down there years ago. I understand that he has lived in the States. In fact, knows the Showalters, Susan's parents, has actually stayed in their home while he was in Ohio. And anyway, it was good to see him. He is now probably one of the main spiritual leaders of the church there in Montego Bay. And there's ours truly, Mr. Chris Jones, teaching the Bible class on Sunday morning at Montego Bay, the first Sunday we were there. Anna Kay and Joe with some of the children in Montego Bay. I'm going to go through these very quickly. Chris Jones helping fill out. Every one of the kids gets a name tag. And Chris was there helping fill out name tags so that everybody, we know, keep up with everybody and their names at our VBS in Savannah Lamar. There's the middle school class meeting outside. Sarah and Matt. Venetia Pinnock, have a very sweet letter from her that I received over the last year from my previous trip, and it was good to be with her. She's a sweetheart, a real sweet young lady. There, me preaching in at SAF or whatever that's worth, and there's inside the building at Cave. And the young man here on the right, on the left-hand side of the picture is John Haynes. He is from Ohio, formerly nationality, actually is Canadian, and he was one of my partners. That's our evening meeting at Cave. And there's no air conditioning, only fans. Fortunately, in the evening, it gets cool because it was hot during the day. 93 degrees, by the way, in the rooms during the day. There was for some reason, they had to turn out the 220, which meant that they had to turn off the air conditioning. And so it was really hot in our rooms, and there was no future in trying to take a nap. Those that attempted were, you know, found it to be futile. And so they just decided to join us on the porch for a game of cards or study or whatever it was in the afternoon. Some more pictures from Kay. That's Trevor. He's my cousin, and he's with one of the children there at Kay. And then John visiting with Maxwell James. I just had to throw this in. You know, it's funny how things go down there. When we arrived at the airport the first day at Sangster, they pulled up in this 28-passenger bus, and I thought, oh, wow. And we left Sangster Airport at 6:30, and, you know, by previous trips, that meant that we were going to actually get there on the first day around 7:30. Wrong. Because as we were heading up the hill, Errol Lawson, who was ahead of us in his truck, ran out of gas. It's either you run out of gas or you have a flat tire. And so, as I predicted, we didn't actually get to the orchard until 10 o'clock. Anyway, one of the days during VBS, I don't know if this was the day we had 70 on the boat. It was? Yeah, about 70. Anyway, going down through a residential area, and I guess they have no road restrictions, and we were meeting an 18-wheeler, and there was no room for pass. And so David made an attempt to go around and give room for this 18-wheeler to go by, and as you can see, he slipped off in the ditch. And it was quite a fiasco. We had to unload the bus, and we had the first guy, Leonard, show up to try to get us out of the bus. And 24-hour wrecking is appropriate name for him, because he didn't get our bus out. In fact, he probably damaged the bus even more. But anyway, we finally got out, and we loaded the kids, and we went on to VBS. And it's interesting, the very day that this happened was also the day that we had two baptisms that evening. Shanique, her mother Erica, is a member there at Cave. And then I think Marcel, I never did really get how to pronounce her name, is from Montego Bay. She's been a Jehovah's Witness for 15 years and recently has started visiting with the church there, and was baptized on Wednesday evening while we were there in Jamaica. I wanted to share with you just real quickly a few things about Jamaican culture. This was taken down by the riverside close to the church building at Cave. And the picture that Joe showed you a minute ago, the ladies washing clothes, daily routine. Here's a picture. picture of the great orchard, the orchard house where we stayed, our group stayed. It's a beautiful location, has all kinds of potential, but not for Americans when there's no air conditioning. They need to get that fixed. But this is kind of the outer courtyard, and in the evening we would meet on the patio and have our evening devotionals before going to bed. Our daily routine usually was up about, 6:30 if you're me. The bus would leave about 8:30 for vacation Bible school. We would get back to the orchard around 2 p.m. and have some time to rest. Then at 5:30 we would go into town and we would either eat at KFC or Burger King. And then after that we would go to worship at Cave, and then usually back to the room around 10 or 10:30 for devotional in bed. I mean, it was like pretty much a full day, and you were pretty tired by the time the day ended. Just a picture there across the street from the church at Cave. Jamaica is one of the most evangelized countries in the world, and full of false religion. And of course, being previously a British possession, the Church of England has a great deal of presence there. And that picture was taken in Sao Lamar. And these two also, the one on top of Sao Lamar and the one on bottom is from Montego Bay. A church bus that said, "Let the Bible speak, church." At the top, "Jesus Christ is the Lord, universal church of the kingdom of God." That was right there on Main Street in Savannah Lamar. It's very heavily evangelized. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about that in a minute. I don't know if you've ever seen one of these. I don't think I've ever had one of these in the picture, and I wish that this one was better. Problem is the sun is so bright in shadows, it's just hard to get good pictures. But they use these carts. I mean, they're everywhere on the streets, and they move everything from produce to wood to trash to rocks to whatever on these carts. And I guess these guys get paid to do that. And you see them all over the place. I want to ask you, what's wrong with that picture? Well, it's real simple. You have a stairway going nowhere. And I don't mean to belittle, but that's a great deal like Jamaican culture. You know, sometimes you just kind of wonder where we're going with this. I just sort of threw that in for humor. On our way to Marlin Alvarez, this chicken was actually leased to a chain link fence. And then I don't think I would want to go to a doctor named Trevor Hacker. on our way to Marlin and Aretas, we came to Mabel's house and Wolfgang. Mabel is a faithful Christian, and there's a long story behind her. But one of their businesses is actually taking the bamboo, and they cut it, and they lay it out, and dry it, and bind it, and then sell it to people that think they make a roof out of it. And this was one of their servants, and he was out there binding the bamboo together. Okay, that's all the foolishness. I want to first of all share with you some three individuals that really, really touched my heart during this last trip. When I go to Jamaica, I feel like at times that I'm about as close to the spirit, evangelistic spirit of Jesus as anywhere that I've ever worked. Walking the streets and talking to the crowds who are so willing to talk. The beggars, the poor folks, the false teachers, the religiously confused are up and down that street. And there are three individuals that I really want to talk about in conclusion this afternoon. The first one is Jackie Jolly. I first met her in 1992 on my first trip. At that time, she was in her teens. I'm going to guess around 18 or 19 years old. She was a very bright young lady, full of vigor, full of enthusiasm. In fact, one of the first times that I met Jackie, we were on a van, you know, with about 25 of us stuffed in a van, taking children to VBS. And she was the one who would, you know, get the kids to sing a chorus, to kind of lighten the load and everything. And she was always smiling. Well, times have become hard for Jackie. She is now approximately 36 years old, and she has been hardened by the world. The a lot of it due to her own poor choices, some of it just simply due to the difficult world that she lives in. She has several children. Her oldest daughter, not in this picture, this was taken, by the way, the last year. But her oldest daughter has a child, which means that Jackie has a grandchild. Imagine being 36-year-old and you've already got a grandchild. She has had been previously married. The relationship was abusive, and so because of that, she was forced to get out of that relationship. She spends several months out of the year in California. She flies at her own expense to California, works in a resort, cleaning hotel rooms. In fact, she prided herself. About the only time I saw her smile was one evening when she was over at Kay, and she said, "You see that cheek?" And I said, "Yeah." And I said, "What about it?" And she said, "That's where Colin Powell kissed. Colin Powell kissed my cheek. I saw him the last time I was in California." But the work is hard. The pay is very little, but it's better than what you get in Jamaica. She has no one to take care of her children while she's gone. Her oldest daughter isn't very responsible, and so she has to leave her children behind, a lot of times not knowing who's going to be taking care of them, while she goes to California for several months just to be able to make enough money to make ends meet. She's behind in her rent, and the burdens are really great. And so therefore, what do you say to someone who more or less has nothing to look forward to in this world? And that's basically what you have in Jackie. Very little to look forward to. Well, my admonition was what Jesus said, and that is sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. Number one, take one day at a time. And number two, I said, Jackie, you know, you and I have known each other for several years, and I remember when you were a young lady and you prided yourself in showing me the certificates, the awards that you had won while you were in school, in high school, in track. Yeah, yeah. I said, well, you know what it's like to run a race. Yeah. I said, well, you know, the Bible tells us that living the Christian life is a lot like a race. As the Hebrew writer says, therefore we are all. Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with patience the race set before us. I said, sister, God has something better planned for you. And through all of this, she has remained faithful. And I said, you need to keep running the race. And what Jackie reminds me of is that when I think times are tough, times aren't all that tough. Not compared to her. All she has to look forward to, basically, is glorifying God in the few days she has left and heaven. There was also a young man that we met, and I'll show this picture. I like this picture because it says Great Georgia Street. But that's the main street in Saint Lamar. And while Joe and Anna Kay and the kids were spending their mornings at VBS, two of my comrades, Jeff Harward on the left and John Haynes in the middle, spent our time walking the streets of Saint Lamar. Chris did some of this with us too. Four of us, on one walking down one sidewalk and one walking down another, and just handing out tracts, inviting them to our evening meetings and telling the mothers about Vacation Bible School. And there were two rather interesting individuals that we met during the 3 days that we were walking the streets of Saint Lamar. One was a fellow by the name of Omar. And he was peddling some of the writings of Ellen G. White, the founder of the Seventh-day Adventist religion. I thought it was interesting that he had quite an evangelistic spirit. He had a satchel full of books, but no Bible. And we kind of, you know, politely said, look, if you think your religion is from the Bible, then wouldn't it behoove you to have a Bible in your satchel? Yeah, 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 yeah. He agreed with us on that one. And we had a lively discussion for about 30 minutes on the streets of Saint Lamar. It sort of reminded me of when Jesus encountered the Sadducees, And he said, you do err not knowing the scriptures nor the power of God, Matthew the 22nd chapter. And there was one passage that we finally shared with him. It's in the book of 2 Corinthians chapter 3. And the reason why I looked at this verse is because Seventh-day Adventists believe that the old law was divided into two separate laws. A moral law, the Ten Commandments, and then the ceremonial law. And they believe that the ceremonial law passed away, but the moral law stayed. And they believe that this moral law was the law that was actually engraved in stone. And so we went to 2 Corinthians, the third chapter. And in 2 Corinthians chapter 3, Paul says in verse 7, But if the ministry of death written and engraved on stones was glorious, so that the children of Israel could not look steadily at the face of Moses because of the glory of his countenance, which glory was passing away, how will the ministry of the Spirit not be more glorious? For if the ministry of condemnation, that's the old law, had glory in this respect, because of the glory that excels, for if what is passing away was glorious, what remains is more glorious. Well, we showed him the passage, and we said, we hope to see you tomorrow. And when we do, we hope you have an answer for this verse. If you're right, then you'll have an answer. Well, later in the evening, we did see him at the Burger King. And one of the things that was kind of neat about that is that some of our kids came into the Burger King, and he said, who are all these people? Where do they come from? What organization is this? And our answer was, no organization. 25 Christians who love the Lord, who have come to Jamaica to preach the gospel. No organization. And he was just, he couldn't figure that out. He just bumfolded him, you know? And I think was quite impressed. And so we said, Omar, tomorrow we want to see you. Oh yeah, I'll see you tomorrow. Tomorrow evening, I'll see you at supper. I'll have an answer to your chapter, to your verse. Okay. All right. We'll look for it. Well, he never showed up. And I was a little disappointed in that. But anyway, we encountered Omar. The third individual is a young lady, and I didn't get pictures of these people. Number one, because I felt like I was invading privacy, and I just really didn't want to do that. Was a young lady by the name of Michelle. She is approximately 30 years old. She has a son by a previous relationship. She's a very bright young lady. Top salesman at the Gold Rush Jewelry and Appliance Store on Great Georgia Street in Save Lamar. Has extremely high standards in comparison to many of the others that live there. And morally, as well as her work ethic. We were very impressed with her, a real sharp young lady. But life has been hard for Michelle. Her boss takes advantage of her on occasions, refuses to allow her even to have a day off to be with her children. She had previously been in an abusive relationship with a man for 5 years, and she has been approached by every false religion imaginable. She said, I've looked at all of them. She said, Jehovah's Witnesses, she said, that religion doesn't even make sense. Seventh-day Adventists, Pentecostals, Mormons, every religion imaginable. And she said, I want you to know that I'm very confused. But Michelle is searching, truly searching. But at the same time, extremely skeptical. In fact, she kept asking the question, why did you come into my place of business? And we had to be honest. We came into your place of business because we opened the door and there was the cool air. It was air conditioned. I mean, after 30 minutes on a hot street, heat index of 114, you know, old man like me and Jeff, we got to go somewhere. And we opened the door and this cold air hit us in the face. And so Jeff said, we're going in here. So we went in there and lo and behold, we began to engage in a discussion with Michelle. She said, why did you come to see me? Providence, perhaps, I don't know. But I do know this, I know she is searching. And we talked with her about New Testament Christianity very briefly in the store and gave her some information to read. In fact, I gave her a copy of the Faith Builders that are back there on the track rack. And she was so impressed that she said, I would like to visit more. 2 days later, we went by the store and she was there. And she said, I've read what you gave me and I'm very impressed with it. And I want to come to worship on Sunday. And so Brother Harward and I and Brother Tan and several others went back over to Cave on Sunday morning, and we met her downtown and gave her a ride to worship. And I was the one invited to preach the lesson that morning, and I had a very simple lesson, the 16th chapter of Acts in verse 30, what must I do to be saved? And she was touched by the lesson. In fact, afterward, we sat and visited for a while, and she was fighting the tears. She said, I've never heard anything like this before, but still afraid, still skeptical, and still afraid that she would not be able to live up, she said, to the life that God would demand of me as a Christian. And we simply shared with her such as Jesus' invitation in Matthew 11, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. And in 1 John 1 and verse 7, if we walk in the light as he is in the light, we have fellowship one with another, and the blood of Jesus Christ, his Son, cleanses us from all sin. That certainly there is a commitment, but God doesn't expect you to be perfect, that you have to grow in that relationship. One of the things that Michelle reminded me of is one of my favorite passages in all the Gospels. It's found in the 4th chapter of the Gospel of Luke. And I'm sorry I've gone a little long with this, but in the 4th chapter of the Gospel of Luke, Jesus had come to Nazareth and went into the synagogue on the Sabbath day. And in Luke chapter 4, it says in verse 17 that he was handed the book of the prophet Isaiah. And when he had opened the book, he found the place where it was written, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to preach the gospel to the poor. He has sent me to heal the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the acceptable year of the Lord. That was the Spirit of Jesus. And he closed the book and gave it back to the attendant and sat down. And all the eyes of all who were in the synagogue were fixed on him. And he began to say to them, today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing. If that was the Spirit of Jesus, that needs to be our spirit as well. I was going to sing a hymn, but I'm not going to do that because I don't want to take up too much more time. But one of the questions that was asked one evening during devotional is, why did you come to Jamaica? And I can tell you that some of those reasons for me are quite selfish in a way. Number one, I enjoy going because I enjoy showing young people that go with me how lucky they are to live in America. Number two, because it forces me to leave my island. And what I mean by that is it forces me out of my comfort zone. And I benefit from that. It's good for me to do that. I don't want to be in a security blanket all the time. And number three, because when I go, I come back with a much more evangelistic spirit that I hope I can pass on to this church. I want you to be aware of people more than just in these four walls, but also be aware of the fact that we live in a world where there are folks like Michelle who need the gospel, and we live in a world where there are folks like our sister Jackie who are needing our word of encouragement. I thank you for allowing me to go. Let's sing song number 209. You're not going to mind if I go over just a few minutes. Let's sing number 209. After this, we'll have an invitation, and then we'll ask Ed to lead us in that invitation song. Number 209.
For the world we sing, the world to Christ we bring.
You know, man's greatest question, the question that was asked by a jailer in the 16th chapter of Acts in verse 30, what must I do to be saved? It is not what must I do to be decent, or what must I do to be respectable or rich or beautiful, but rather, what must I do to be saved? And this is the question that Michelle was grasping with on Sunday morning. And the answer is very simple. I go to Acts chapter 2 and verse 38, very familiar passage. The question was asked, what must we do? And Peter's simple answer is repent and be baptized in the name of Christ for the remission of sins. Maybe there's someone here today who is touched by the message of Jesus, willing to come to Christ today on his terms. If that be your need, would you come as we sing number 307? Would you come?